Good morning, Lake Tahoe, and everywhere else people are tuning in to this virtual meeting. My name is Bill Yates, and I'm going to call this meeting of the TRPA Regional Plan Implementation Committee to order. The date is Wednesday, March 24th, 2021. It is 8:30 a.m. A virtual meeting today. Actually, I think this is our year anniversary of virtual meetings. And first item of agenda is the roll call. Maria, would you determine the quorum, please?
Ms. Alding?
Here.
Mr. Bruce?
Here.
Mr. Friedrich? Ms. Gustafson?
Here.
Mr. Lawrence?
Here.
Mr. Yates?
Here.
Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you very much. I'll now review our virtual meeting rules for the day. To observe and participate in the meeting, go to www.trpa.gov and select March 24th, 2021 Governing Board Meeting on the calendar and follow the link to the webinar. Members of the public can find all meeting materials there as well. In order to participate in this Regional Plan Implementation Committee meeting with your comments, please utilize the hand-raising function in the GoToWebinar platform at the appropriate agenda item. With your hand raised, you'll be unmuted by TRPA staff and have 3 minutes to address the Regional Plan Implementation Committee. If you've contacted TRPA for reasonable accommodation and received a unique PIN for dial-in, please make sure you enter that PIN so that you may be identified and unmuted by TRPA staff. If you're using GoToWebinar's Instant Join web app, please make sure it's opened in the Google Chrome browser and that you allow access to your microphone in order to be unmuted. If you are joining via the call-in number posted on our website, please note this is a listen-only option. If you wish to address the Regional Plan Implementation Committee, you will need to log in via GoToWebinar on your computer, tablet, or smartphone, or dial your unique PIN number. To my colleagues on the Regional Plan Implementation Committee, if you wish to speak, please alert me via the chat function if you're online, or speak up if you're calling in. Please make sure you send your chat message to panelists and organizers. Please do not use the chat function to indicate anything other than your desire to speak. No sidebar conversations. Finally, everyone remember to mute your mic unless speaking to cut down on any background noise. The next item is the approval of the agenda. Staff, are there any changes in the agenda?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. There are no changes to the agenda.
Okay, I'll deem the agenda approved as posted. And we'll move on. We have a set of amendments from the January 27th, 2021 Regional Plan Implementation Committee meeting. Do any members of the committee wish to make any changes to those minutes?
Good morning, Bill. This is Shelley. I've already submitted some minor clerical changes to Maria, so I'm prepared to make a motion to approve the minutes from January 27th, 2021 as amended.
Okay. Shelley, I think I'll let you do that. Thank you. Are you going to make that motion or did you make the motion? I'm sorry.
Well, that was my motion.
Okay. All right. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any objections? Motion passes. Thank you. Okay, the next three items we're combining into one presentation. So items 3, 4, and 5 will be heard in one staff presentation. However, I will point out to my colleagues on the committee, because of the length of this presentation, if in fact there are issues that are raised that you want some clarification on, rather than wait to the end when your thought or whatever may vanish, I think you should feel free to either send me a chat or just ask your question. And I hope staff will not feel too interrupted, but that's the way my cheat sheet is set up to allow for committee members to ask questions during and in between the presentations. But the public comment, and just to alert the public, this is a place where you can make your public comment, will be at the end of this presentation. The items begin on page 85 of our packet, and the three items are the discussion and possible recommendation on amending the existing nitrate deposition threshold standard AQ14 to a per capita VMT standard to reduce reliance on the automobile, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and promote mobility. Item four is a discussion and possible recommendation on amendments to implementing the goals and policies of the regional plan to accelerate attainment of the per capita VMT standard and implement the regional transportation plan, including the regional plan chapter 3 transportation element and chapter 7 implementation element, to attain the per capita vehicle mile traveled standard and implement the regional transportation plan. And item five is discussion and possible direction on amending the existing nitrate deposition threshold standard, AQ14, to a per capita vehicle miles traveled standard to reduce reliance on the automobile, reduce GHG emissions, and promote mobility. And so I believe, Joanne, you will be beginning the staff presentation, and I'm going to get off my camera.
Indeed, Mr. Chair, thank you, and good morning, everyone. To introduce these items, I want to make a few important points right up front to set some context. I have said to the board before, transportation can be hard to understand because it's a complex system. And we're engaged in systems change. And that complex system has lots of moving parts and many implementers. So our task today with you is really to help you see what this is. You like that slide? Our task is really to help you see what we're proposing to accomplish, how all the different pieces of this fit together. We're aligning all the parts of the compact system. That means the threshold goal, which is the top of the pyramid, the plans that implement the goal, the project assessment, and the funding targets. And we're doing that for the first time ever to better achieve an integrated land use and transportation vision that is set out in our regional plan. This is a vastly improved and far more coherent system because our regulatory system now, which is thresholds, plans, and project assessment, is now married to a funding strategy or set of funding strategies to implement all of it. So we're on the precipice here of something big, and you'll see later in the board meeting agenda, we have about 150 threshold standards. It's been one of our top priorities since 2015 to update and bring current those thresholds that we adopted 40 years ago, and that no longer, some of them that no longer provide meaningful guidance for our programs and our management. So all prior adopted thresholds did one of two things. They either prevent something bad or they're intended to restore something lost. None of them until now have been oriented to creating something new, which is a necessary desired outcome, which here is implementing our regional transportation plan. This is a first. So we're recommending the first new threshold in 40 years in a new category for sustainable Tahoe. And like the clarity threshold, it sets the desired outcome. This is the outcome that is an integrated land use and transportation system for Tahoe, and it's basically the desired outcome that we're looking for our built environment. So this new threshold addresses and delivers on the compact's directive, the explicit directive to reduce reliance on the private automobile by making more efficient use of other transportation modes. And without this change, we've been trying for years to motivate multi-millions in investment in land use and transportation projects by penalizing a few annual residential allocations if we don't reach our VMT goals. So the new 25-year threshold goal is now linked instead to adaptive change every 2 years with regulatory implementation milestones of the regional transportation plan every 8 years. Then we go further. We go further to improve and align every level of the transportation system to the others to meet that threshold goal. So Dan Segan first is going to show you how the new threshold depends on meeting those interim progress milestones that implement our regional transportation plan. And Andy's going to show you that we tied the success of those milestones to finding new transportation funding. Michelle Glickert is going to outline for you that we didn't just take the RTP as it stands, the regional transportation plan as it stands. This next 2020 RTP has tailored improvements to better implement our transportation system and meet that new threshold. And then Melanie Sloan is going to show you that we left no stone unturned. Even though Tahoe's growth is capped so that new and redevelopment accounts for really only a very small increment of new VMT, it's less than 7%. Nonetheless, we went ahead and redesigned our project assessment and mitigation tools to make sure that development has no unmitigated new VMT. So every project is going to pay a fee to help fund a larger set of transportation programs, and larger projects are going to have to add on the ground transportation mitigation. The package here has another less obvious benefit. It not only better implements our regional vision of the regional plan and regional transportation plan, but today's changes actually fully meet and even overachieve on important statewide policies and standards in both Nevada and California. So it's important to understand we are in fact required to implement certain California policy as the inner role as the designated Metropolitan Planning Organization, MPO, and as the California Regional Transportation Planning Authority. So this is going to be a bit of an alphabet soup here, but first, that's why you read in the staff report that the plan meets and exceeds statewide GHG reduction targets for the transportation sector. And that's for both the new Nevada Climate Plan and California AB 32. That's a statute in California that set GHG reduction targets. Those targets for the transportation sector are set by CARB for each MPO. So we almost doubled CARB's GHG reduction target with the strategies that are now included in our regional transportation plan. Secondly, we more than meet California's policies in something called SB 375 for implementing that GHG reduction for land use and transportation statewide. California, a decade ago, required MPOs to integrate land use and transportation. How? By creating compact, walkable, bikeable, transit-oriented development in town centers that would reduce VMT. So TRPA is the only MPO in the state that uses regulatory authority to shift the legacy land use pattern and create that compact development over time. We couple that with transit, trails, technology, all of those improvements so that people drive less. All of those sustainable communities implementing strategies and incentives of SB 375 are adopted into our regional plan and regional transportation plan. And we are in fact the poster child for that sustainable community strategy across the state of California. And finally, there's a third new California statute. It's called SB 743. It was passed to implement the greenhouse gas reductions of the Sustainable Communities Strategy, or SB 375. It was passed to to implement at the project level. And because all California local jurisdictions now have to use SB 743 to analyze and mitigate projects in their jurisdiction for GHG reduction, to avoid two sets of differing requirements, we aligned our project analysis at TRPA to it, and we've made some targeted adjustments to it to best reflect Tahoe's projects. So TRPA's approach has been similar to 743 for decades. Now we've aligned both of them. So in other words, take all of this and see, we have met the best of both worlds. When we implement today's package, we are not only going to meet what the compact requires better, we are also going to meet and exceed the state policies. That's AB 32 and Nevada's climate plan. That's the sustainable communities and land use standards for compact, transit-oriented, bikeable, walkable development of SB 375. And that's the project assessment methods for GHG reduction under SB 743. So we think that twofer, which is meeting the compact, meeting all those state policies, is a home run, and it's basis enough for you to support today's package. I'm going to make one final point here that I want to leave you with. No one seems to really be questioning our transportation vision for the future, but we are still working on a few details of how advocates think we should get there. So there are some advocates that favor, obviously, different advocates favor different strategies for systems change. Some favor more hard-handed regulation as being the best motivator of coordinated action and systems change. Others favor incentives and encouragement with accountability being the best motivator. Our point of view at staff, when it comes to funding the RTP to achieve the threshold, the Environmental Improvement Program over 25 years has proved to be our very best model. You can't regulate EIP funding into existence. It is only voluntary partnerships and coordinated agreements that work to leverage new funding when it's needed. That's what the ongoing transportation funding initiative with the two states, with local governments, with the private sector, and with other advocates, all of that that's ongoing, it's what that will achieve. And we're so confident that we can get to that new funding consensus that we've made that success a performance standard. It is a regulatory trigger, but we have left ourselves all the flexibility available for how we build that partnership that's needed to get to the commitment to new funding. So that's voluntary partnership with accountability, much like our existing EIP. What we know from 50 years at TRPA is that systems change is this mix of regulation, incentive, and funding partnerships. And we've combined all three into today's recommended approach. We've had endless debate with different advocates about what the right mix of strategies is to deliver this new transportation system structure and its implementation. We've been at this for, depending upon where you start counting, 3, maybe 4 years. We've had hundreds of meetings. We've had thousands of hours of explanation and input and adjustments. And we think we've set the right mix and used the right tools in the right part of the system to achieve the different desired end here. We are hoping that you see by the end of today that until today, we had a 40-year-old BMT standard that's never been related or tied to in any way to the implementation of Tahoe's transportation vision in the RTP. Today's recommendations are a total remake that finally, 40 years later, we can now align the desired outcomes with the plans, the projects, and the funding that's needed to deliver what everyone has been clamoring for, which is a first-rate Tahoe transportation system that serves our needs looking ahead. Staff is going to walk through each part of the thought frame today. We're going to outline each proposal. We're going to identify any issues that may still come up in comments or that we're working on. We're going to make recommendations for how to resolve those. And then at the end of today, what we would like is an affirmative recommendation to proceed with the package as presented, and of course, with any direction needed to refine details by April for a final decision. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to our staff to make the more detailed presentations.
Thank you, Joanne, very much for that overview. I'm sorry to interrupt here just before Dan starts up, but I botched the introduction regarding item number 5. And so I just want to make sure everybody out there listening that the fifth item is a discussion and possible recommendation amendments and revisions to the transportation project impact assessment and air quality mitigation fee, including related amendments to chapters 2, 3, 22, 34, 39, 50, 65, 82, and 90 of the TRPA Code of Ordinances. And as Joanne pointed out, this is a part of this overall systematic change that we're making, but this is the one that deals with the project-specific impacts on vehicle miles traveled. And so, Dan, if you want to begin your presentation, thank you very much.
Thanks for that, Bill, and thanks for the introduction, Joanne. For the record, my name is Dan Segan, TRPA staff. And I'm going to start at the beginning in a slide that most of you have probably already seen a couple times before. And it's a graphic that we refer to as the TRPA wheel. And at the center of that wheel, you'll find maintenance and attaining of the threshold standards. And that's because the threshold standards themselves are central to everything that we do. And that's not just our view of the world. That's the compact's directive for the agency. It's to establish threshold standards that establish our goals, and then to maintain a regional plan that achieves those goals, implement that through permitting and compliance, implement that proactively through the environmental improvement program. Those are the blue parts of the wheel. And then that shaded part is the implementing through partnership and through collaboration through areas outside of our control. And so given the importance of these threshold standards and that they drive both the contents of our regional plan and the investments of the environmental improvement program partners, you may think we'd spend a lot more time talking about what the threshold standards actually are and ensuring, as Joanne mentioned, that they are aligned with what we're trying to do. And I think many would be surprised, if you go to the next slide, please, to learn what's actually in our threshold standards. So many of you would probably be surprised to learn that we've got a threshold standard that protects Canada goose habitat. Next slide, please. But we have none related to wildfire. We have 22 standards related to vegetation and forest health management, but none of them actually relate to wildfire. Next slide, please. We have standards that relate to the protection of habitat for deer. Next slide, please. But none that actually establish goals for our transportation program. Next slide, please. And that's really the story of why we're here today. Because we have let our plans get ahead of our goals. And in that, we've gotten complacent in our duty within the compact. And instead of actually updating the goals ourselves, and in the absence of that, we've allowed others to redefine our goals for us. And that's really the story of the VMT threshold standard. It's a standard for nitrate deposition established to promote clarity of the lake and reduce algal growth over 40 years ago. And through that time period, it has been redefined by others to mean various other things that it was never intended to be. And the update we're proposing today is probably something that should have been done over 20 years ago, when the 2001 threshold evaluation first identified that the relationship between NOx emissions and VMT was changing in such a way that rendered the original intent of the standard moot. And if we didn't do it 20 years ago, we probably should have done it after the 2012 regional plan update to better align what we were doing there. Because in reality, we've been planning for more sustainable communities and trying to promote them both within our regional plan and within our regional transportation plan for over 20 years. And instead of actually updating our goals that we could measure progress against an appropriate measure, we've tried to measure progress towards those goals through other measures. We've tried to repurpose existing measures and say that those were the measures of progress. Next slide, please. And today we've done a lot of groundwork, not just on this threshold standard, but on the entire system of threshold standards, the 146 standards that Joanne mentioned. And we've had a lot of conversations over the past 4 years with our partners at the Tahoe Science Advisory Council, starting with incredibly mundane questions or questions that seem mundane in nature, like what types of standards should be a threshold standards and what types of measures are more appropriate for other parts of our system. And how should a threshold standard be written? And all of that work laid the foundation not only for the governing board to adopt a new definition of threshold standards and new requirements for threshold standards a little over a year ago, but also the foundation for what we're asking you to do today, to adopt the first new threshold standard under that framework. Next slide, please. As Joanne mentioned, we've come a long way in this process, and I probably don't need to remind anyone on this committee that this is the fourth time that you've heard us present about the VMT threshold standard in this year. And I've created a sort of a brief timeline of the last 4 years, trying not to highlight all the meetings, but condense only to the real highlights here. Starting way back in 2017, when we first identified VMT to be one of the first threshold standards to move through this process, convened a group to review the purpose of transportation measures, then worked through refining not only what a threshold standard was, but then adopting that into the regional plan and threshold standards, then really refining our goal for this process, and then convening a technical advisory group to help us actually work through the target setting process for this threshold standard. Next slide, please. And we started with that goal definition because that's where the compact has us start. That's what the compact says. First, identify the goals for which you want to drive the partnership to work towards and establish a threshold standard to drive action towards that goal. And we all know that the threshold standard, the existing threshold standard, was motivated by concerns over NOx emissions, loss of clarity, and the lake's health overall. And we started this process by defining what are those things that we care about today. And we landed on three things that you endorsed a little over 6 months ago as the goals to drive our standard setting process. And those were the goals of increasing mobility within our region, reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and reducing dependence on the automobile, fulfilling that compact directive from over 40 years ago. Next slide, please. And those three things in general are something that are frequently referred to as sustainable communities or a core pillar of creating more sustainable communities. And we're not the first place to start to think about how we create a more sustainable community for our residents and for our environment and how we establish that balance. There are cities and states all over the country that are seeking to do the exact same thing. And every one of them has landed on the same thing. You need to better coordinate your land use and transportation system. And that is a result of reflection on the past. So for years and years, we've allowed our land use decisions to drive our investments in our transportation systems. We've built new outlet malls on the outskirts of town and then built a four-lane highway to get people there. We've built new subdivisions in the suburbs and then expanded the roadway network to get there. And as this process repeated itself all over the country, people started to look at the results and really reevaluate the entire wisdom of what was happening. The wisdom of letting our land use decisions drive our transportation investments. And a new school of thought started to emerge as it started to look at the results of this. And what they started to realize was that what you ended up by repeating this process again and again was not happier people, but more people spending more and more time in their cars, trying to drive to work and trying to drive to the next thing that you'd built for them. And they realized that this was a pretty broken cycle, this endless cycle of build somewhere, expand transportation infrastructure to get you there. And we're fortunate enough in the Tahoe region that we opted out of that cycle a fair time ago. We opted out of that cycle by deciding to stop building new subdivisions in our region and to stop expanding our roadways. But opting out of the endless cycle is only one part of the equation. Next slide, please. Because once you've actually opted out of the cycle, you actually need to start to fix the problems that you've created through that cycle in the past. And the solution that everyone has landed on to this problem is better integrating your land use and transportation planning and doing both at the same time, not letting land use drive transportation. And what does that really mean? Because fundamentally, it means two things. It means first that we start to provide more options for people and encourage people to use those other options. And later today, Michelle is going to be talking more about our RTP, which is how we provide more options for people and how we gently nudge them to use those additional options through programs like paid parking and through greater access to information. And second, once you've provided people with additional options, you need to put more people in positions where they can actually start to take advantage of all the options that you've provided them and start to travel in ways other than with their automobile. And later today, Melanie is going to provide more detail about the refinements to our regional plan that are going to help us do just that. And I think it's important, I call those refinements to our regional plan because we updated our regional plan in 2012. And that's when an era when many people were actively thinking about how do we better coordinate land use and transportation policy? How do we make this a reality of breaking that cycle? And our regional plan has its roots in the same thinking that informed a whole suite of cities and states around the country that were starting to get serious about this idea. So if you're thinking back to the turn of the last century, California had recently passed SB 375, which Joanne mentioned. And what that really did is it required MPOs all around the state to really integrate land use and transportation planning so that they could reduce emissions, build more environmentally friendly communities, more sustainable development, and ultimately allow people to spend less time in our cars. And our regional plan was being written at that time and is steeped in that same ethos. And it included all sorts of things that encourage additional density in our town centers, including density requirements, coverage requirements, transfer incentives, all of which had an eye towards focusing people in the areas that we could better provide them with additional transportation options. So we've got this incredibly strong basis that Melanie is going to be talking about how we're making improvements around the edges to further that vision and further implement what we're trying to do here. Next slide, please. And because we're not the first to look at creating a more sustainable community, we're also not the first to think about how best to measure our success. And the measure that we're proposing today, the threshold standard, is benchmarked in VMT per capita, which is favored by many because it's such a simple measure. And what VMT per capita ultimately is it is the average number of vehicle or average number of miles that each person in the population that you're looking at travels over the course of the day. So in the silly example on the slide, you've got three people, each of which drive their cars 10 miles a day. So your average VMT per capita is 10 in this population. And this is the same measure that's used by SB 375. It's also one of the core pillars of what Joanne mentioned, the legislation SB 743 that implements that. And one of the reasons that it's favored is because it so well captures the interaction between land use and transportation planning and your success at that. Next slide, please. And one of the reasons that it captures that well is it responds exactly as we might expect to both the old model of land use planning driving transportation planning. And here is an example of that. We had our existing population, three people each driving 10 a day. We decided to build a new subdivision way out in the suburbs where commuters need to drive all the way into town. So the new person in our population needs to drive 30 miles a day. And we see that the VMT per capita of our population increases to 15. And it's a red arrow because that's a negative outcome. The communities where people are driving less have lower VMT per capita. Next slide, please. And we also see that it responds exactly how we would expect to the new model, where we have better coordination between transportation and land use planning, and where we're putting new people within our population in places that they are closer to the destinations that they want to be, so that they can drive less, and so that they can also take other modes, so that they can walk or bike if they choose, or take transit if they choose. And here's an example where we've added someone in one of those areas, and rather than VMT per capita going up, it's now gone down. So we've succeeded in getting people out of their automobiles. So we have the appropriate measure for success. Next slide, please. And I spoke at length about this at the meeting last month, but once we identified the appropriate measure for success, we convened a group and a technical advisory group and held a series of meetings on how to actually establish a target for ourselves. And we went through what's the best baseline for VMT information for our region. What's the best source of information for counting our population? We know that in Tahoe, we have a resident population of just over 50,000 that accounts for about half of our VMT. So what does it really tell us if we're only including those? And we made the decision to consider all travelers within our region so that the VMT threshold and the per capita measure would actually account for everyone. And we went through that process to establish both the baseline for VMT, and then we looked at both our regional plan and our regional transportation plan, our broad visions and ambitious visions for our transportation future, the tomorrow of a more walkable, bikeable Tahoe. And we said, what would happen if we implemented all of this, if we were successful in all of our efforts? And what we identified and the proposal before you today is that if we were able to do that, by 2045, we would reduce VMT per capita within our region by 6.8%. And that is an ambitious target. And as Joanne mentioned, part of the reason we know it's ambitious, not just because of the scale of our RTP and what we're trying to accomplish there, not just because we're trying to increase transit ridership fivefold, but because of its relationship to our existing targets. So as Joanne mentioned, we are a designated MPO on the California side. And as that, we have obligations under CARB to reduce GHG emissions per capita. And the current adopted standard under CARB is to reduce them 5% by 2035. The proposal before you today reduces them 10% by 2035. It doubles that target and then continues the expected reductions out to 2045. That's what we have to do to meet this target. Next slide, please. In order to get there, we've identified three core elements of our proposed framework, and we think there's general agreement on these. The first is that we've established a series of milestones to evaluate progress. So we're setting a goal for ourselves that is 24 years out into the future, and there's not one of us here that wants to wake up 23 years from now and realize we just have a ton of work to do. So we've got a series of milestones established for ourselves at which we evaluate progress. We do that every 2 years to promote adaptive management. And then we've got larger milestones, the first of which is in 2024, as Joanne mentioned, around identification of sustainable funding. And then in 2029 and every 8 years after that, we have checkpoints where we establish how we are progressing relative to how the VMT reduction relative to where we'd like to be in that period. And if we have not corrected and done any course correction in the interim, automatic triggers are done. We also have identified independent guidance as a core element of this implementation framework in the form of a single advisory body to help us oversee adaptive management towards that target. So I mentioned we would be doing biannual summaries of progress every 2 years. Those findings will be taken to this independent advisory body who will provide us with recommendations on that two-year cycle on how we can better modify the incentives of the regional plan and how we can modify the RTP to accelerate attainment of this target. And finally, we have triggered management responses. And these triggered management responses are really actions that are taken if those milestones in step one are not being met. And these are really a fallback that we hope never actually happen, because the intention is actually that we adaptively manage ourselves towards this target. But as a fallback, we do have these triggered responses, specific things that happen if we're not on target. Next slide, please. And while I think we've got broad outline or broad agreement on the general framework, there are some remaining issues. And I think before I turn it over to Michelle to talk more about the RTP and how we're going to promote mobility, I'd like to leave you thinking about at least two items that we'll likely revisit at the close of the presentation. And these are two bigger picture ones. These are not the sort of technical feedback that we've received on various parts of the proposal for how we calculate a specific number or what specific level we set something else as. These are broader conceptual things that relate to the philosophy of how we've gone about designing this implementation framework. And the first of those is around trust. And trust really boils down to what happens immediately after we adopt the standard and whether or not we trust the Tahoe partnership to work towards it itself. So in the proposal before you today, the first milestone with a trigger is one for sustainable funding in 2024, a year which is already well ahead of when the RTP expects sustainable funding to be online. And that trigger stipulates that if funding is not in place, that all projects within our region will be held to a no-net VMT standard of significance. And we've heard comments from multiple stakeholders that they'd like to see that standard or that trigger revised in two ways. The first is that they'd like to put a specific dollar amount in the trigger in order to make it have more teeth. And the second is that they think rather than having the trigger in 2024 and the movement over to no-net VMT as a failure to find sufficient funding, that we should start the program in all projects being no-net VMT, and that that might motivate partners to work harder to find a funding source. And I think when we fundamentally think about each of those two, really what that boils down to in trust. We have put the trigger as something that would happen in 2024 because we've placed our trust in the partners engaged in the bi-state consultation for transportation funding for our region, that they are engaged in those discussions in a good faith effort to secure a meaningful amount of funding for transportation within our region, and that we don't need to restrict those negotiations by setting a specific dollar amount. I think the same can be said for also no-net VMT, because you're also likely to hear comments today that we should consider adding no-net VMT as a consequence if we miss an additional milestone. And while I think we acknowledge that we've included no-net VMT within this proposal as a consequence, we do also acknowledge that it's the product of political compromise, and going to no-net VMT could likely have negative consequences for implementation of the regional plan and could also slow threshold attainment by preventing projects that would focus development within town centers and reduce per capita VMT in our region. Let's trust the first. I think the second issue relates to your relative preference for prescriptive versus adaptive management and how much you believe that we can see tomorrow's problems and their solutions today and design appropriate triggers for those. And this issue manifests itself in two ways. As I mentioned, we have triggered responses at eight intervals. And those triggers hinge on raising fees if we're off track. And we decided to focus on raising fees rather than bake in a regulatory response, because we figured that additional fees will always help us achieve our targets. But baking in regulatory responses assumes that we actually understand why we are off target today. And our working proposal and what is contained in the proposal before you today is that we allow the adaptive management process and the independent guidance that drives us to actually make those decisions, review the evidence, and then decide whether it's best to make regulatory changes to the Commute Tahoe program, to our land use program, or to parking management programs. But that today we cannot see those quite as clearly as our future selves will be able to once they've seen how implementation is played out. I thank you, and with that, I think I will turn it over to Michelle to talk about the regional transportation plan.
Mr. Chair, this is Jim Lawrence. I do have a question for Dan when the appropriate time comes up.
Also, Shelley has a question too, but go ahead, Jim.
Please, Jim. Sorry, I didn't mean to jump in line. Go ahead, Shelley.
No, go ahead, Jim. That's all right.
Okay, thanks. I apologize. Thanks, Dan, for the presentation. It's really helpful, and every time I dive into this, I have more clarity and understanding. In particular, the slide you have up is really what I have a question on, and I appreciate it, particularly the adaptive versus prescriptive management component. It's certainly something that I have struggled with and sort of changed philosophies with during my career doing environmental work and environmental mitigation. My personal philosophy is I've learned to understand that I'm not as smart, or humans are not as smart at predicting the future as we think we are. So I do think it's important to, when we're talking about triggers and responses, to have that evaluation period, whether a trigger was hit or not hit, but to have that evaluation in the interim about what's going on, if it's not working, to understand why, or if it is working, to understand why, because something might be working that has nothing to do with us. It could be outside factors. Can you talk a little bit, as I wrestle through this, the relationship in the adaptive management process and the technical committee? Do you see the technical committee in this format of making specific regulatory recommendations in the interim at these benchmarks based on what we see happening and what we think is the cause of that? I'm just trying to understand a little bit more robustly how that adaptive management process works.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, so and I think we do need to put a little bit more bones around exactly who is on the independent advisory committee. But the process that's proposed is that every 2 years we would summarize basically everything that's happened within the space. So we would look at both investments in the projects and programs of the RTP. We would look at larger demographic trends. We would summarize all the VMT data. And we would provide a report to that technical body that fundamentally looks at what we think is working and what is not. And then that body would then provide recommendations both on how to modify the regional plan and the regional transportation plan to better accelerate target attainment. And it would be providing that body both to this group and the governing board overall, who would then have discretion over which of those to implement. And the way that the cycle is designed is that we would have three bites at that apple in between these triggered responses. Because I think, you know, I guess I sort of share your philosophy with regard to how little I know about what I can actually design and what I can actually foresee in the future. And so I think, you know, we'd prefer to bake in that which we know we think will work. And we do believe that we need this hard backstop in the advent that the adaptive management cycle doesn't actually get us there, but that in between, you know, during those 6 years in between, that we would actually have the opportunity to make those specific changes.
Thanks, Dan. That's helpful. I appreciate the explanation. And I think I'm hearing you that, because I do firmly believe that if we're going to be more adaptive as opposed to more prescriptive up front, there has to be a robust evaluation period. So if I'm understanding you correctly, that part, what's baked in here is, as we have these interim benchmarks every couple of years, that part of the evaluation is not going to be just whether we hit or miss the mark, but an evaluation of why we didn't hit or miss the mark. And then a recommendation about how to adapt appropriately. And I think sometimes in some processes I work in, it's that evaluation in the interim of why a target was not met. That sometimes doesn't happen when you have a hard trigger or a trigger and a hard response, because there's no space to do the evaluation and adapt moving forward. So thanks for the answer, and I appreciate that. It sounds like staff has kind of thought that process through and how that's going to work.
No, I think that's totally right. I mean, I think the other thing, you know, we've had internal concerns about whether or not this is creating a huge additional workload or burden. And I think, you know, one of the things that has come to light throughout this process is that our transportation team in particular is actually doing this analysis all the time and is a required part and necessary part of their jobs to better, you know, refine the projects and programs of the RTP. And so a lot of this work is actually daylighting work that's already going on and sharing and getting additional input from an independent advisory body.
Thanks, Dan. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have any more questions.
Shelley, you have a question.
Yes, I do. Thank you. Thanks, Dan. I guess this is somewhat simplistic, but when we talk about on page 92, Dan, you indicate that VMT per capita more directly measures auto dependency than total VMT, but per capita VMT is based on annual miles of vehicles travel divided by the total population of a state or an urbanized area. Now, I can understand the applicability of per capita VMT at a local level, but it doesn't seem terribly appropriate or practical to apply it to at a regional level. I mean, maybe we're, you know, maybe it's just a matter of semantics, but, you know, unless you're going to have access to everybody's odometer, you're really not going to have a precise ability to determine the number of miles that every person driving an automobile, you know, is traveling. So if you could just clarify that for me, I would appreciate it.
No, I mean, I think it's a fair critique, Shelley, both of, I think of VMT overall as a metric that especially in a lot of the literature, there's acknowledgement that it's not a value that we can precisely know, specifically because we don't have access to everyone's odometers. But while we don't have that access, there are a number of ways to estimate VMT within the region. And one of the things we worked through with the technical advisory committee is considering three different possible estimates. So there's the estimate that is actually included in the proposal today, which is relying on the statewide or state estimates for our region from NDOT and Caltrans. We also considered using StreetLight, a form of big data, as well as our travel demand model. So we considered each of those three and ultimately landed on the state reported data for either side of the region because it was the most stable and independent of the possible data sources. I think in terms of your question with regard to the scale of application of the measure, I think it is actually, you know, it's widely applied both at the regional and, you know, regional, state, as well as countrywide level. As a measure of how well you've integrated land use and transportation planning. I think when we think back to the relative responsiveness of the measure that we're considering to the factors that we care about, I think one of the things that, you know, concerned us about overall VMT within especially the Tahoe region was its sensitivity to things like visitation and macroeconomic conditions that are, you know, largely outside the control of the agency, and also don't necessarily reflect meaningful accomplishments in terms of provision of better transportation options or more people taking advantage of those options. And I think specifically what I'm thinking about there is, you know, we saw VMT within our region, this is VMT in the absolute sense, increase, you know, throughout the 80s as gaming gained in popularity within our region. And then as it sort of plateaued before, as the casinos started to open in Northern California and we started to see a rise of gaming there, we started to see VMT decline precipitously. I mean, you know, I think it probably peaked out somewhere around 2002 within our region and then remained below the threshold standard, you know, through the Great Recession, before recovering afterwards. And I don't think that really reflects, you know, what we're trying to accomplish with this goal here. It wasn't that our community was more sustainable during that period when we were losing jobs and losing businesses. And, you know, that, or it wasn't that we were providing people with more transportation options. So I think what VMT per capita does is it actually, it controls for the number of travelers that you have and is actually very responsive to the, how those people are actually getting around those the region and how far they have to go to actually get to the places they want to be.
Well, does that help? I guess my an extension of my question is, would it be more appropriate to, you know, focus on VMT within the basin generated by, on a per capita basis, generated by people who actually work, live and work in the basin? I mean, obviously you acknowledge that we have very little control, you know, in the absence of toll booths at all the entries into the basin, very little control over the impact of people visiting the basin from areas adjacent to Lake Tahoe. But it appears, and I appreciate the fact, you know, your conversation with Jim about adaptive versus prescriptive management, but ultimately it's the people of the basin who are going to pay the price if, in fact, we don't meet these objectives, and to a large extent because of an inability to control something that is beyond our purview, and that is, or beyond our ability to control, which is the entrance of people into the basin from outside the region. So I'm a little concerned about the fact that, you know, the only people paying the price of not reaching these benchmarks are the people in the basin.
And I think it's actually an important part and important to distinguish between the overall goal, I think, as it's been proposed, which includes VMT from all travelers within the region, and I think can best be expressed as trying to improve both the experience of those living and working in the community as well as those visiting the community by providing that all of them options with to do something other than travel around the region within their automobile, and then how we manage towards it. So we're including everyone in setting this overall target, and we're accounting for all VMT that occurs within our region and all travelers. How we manage towards that is fundamentally what you said. You know, we break down the different traveling populations and we assign VMT to each of those populations and then tailor programs to each of them in order to reduce them. Because as you would imagine, and I'm probably stealing some of Michelle's thunder, but the different traveling populations have very different needs and respond to very different types of programs. So commuters are not looking for the same sort of transportation services that, say, a resident is, and that may also be different from a visitor to the region. So on the management side, it is very tailored to those individual populations. Does that alleviate some of your concern?
Yeah, as long as in the final analysis, we're not, you know, being punitive. If in fact the folks who live and work in the basin are reducing their reliance on the automobile, they're taking advantage of public transportation, you know, they're doing everything that within their capability to reduce greenhouse gas, you know, and live a sustainable life. I want to make sure that the basin isn't penalized for those things that are clearly beyond our control. And what you seem to be saying, Dan, is that that's the case, that that will be a separate analysis. The question is, will that separate analysis of per capita VMT within the basin generated by people who live and work in the basin, is that going to be the basis for determining whether or not we're achieving our benchmarks? Or is it going to be integrated with VMT per capita from outside sources?
Maybe to link your question to Jim's prior on what is part of this adaptive management process, you know, the intention is in those two-year reports to try to break down, as you say, the different segments. So we should be able to tell you, oh, we think we're seeing VMT growth from commuters, but residents are doing better. But, you know, maybe this to your other concern, those are integrated into the overall target. And so, you know, if one of those was pulling us down, you know, the overall, the management program is triggered on the overall target, not different targets for individual subpopulations.
And Shelley,
well,
this is
a bit of a concern about that. You know, I mean, you only control what you can control. And I think that we are penalizing the wrong people. You know, if the people within the basin are complying and doing their best to help us achieve those goals, and yet they're ultimately the ones who have to make a sacrifice because of things beyond their control. You know, I think there's a bit of inequity in that.
I think, Shelley, that's why.
I mean, just, John, go ahead if you want to jump in.
I just wanted to say, Shelley, that's why we've kind of erred on the adaptive management side rather than the prescriptive management side of these responses, where some might want us to be a little more heavier on the prescriptive side, because it really does depend on, you know, the adaptive management is on where your issues are out in the future. And so I think, you know, yes, there are some triggers, you know, the increase in fees, principally, but that, you know, that affects, you know, whether you're, say, in basin, I think it affects a good portion of people doing projects. And so that's really the, you know, we've kind of erred more on the adaptive management side to say, what's causing the increase if there is one, and how do we best tailor our approach, management approach, to that issue? So if in-basin VMT is going down in terms of people who are everyday Tahoe using, you know, we don't have to necessarily pay attention to that, versus if it's outside visitors, then we're going to have to try to come up with a response to do that. But we need to do that anyway. And I don't think it's really doing it on the back of locals, because the vast majority of funds and requirements for that will come, you know, through different sources rather than, you know, extracting it from locals, which I think we're pretty light fingered on.
I appreciate that, John. Shelley, a lot of these projects,
Shelley,
are going to ultimately benefit.
Shelley, if I could urge you to listen to the overall presentation. When you get to the project implementation that Melanie will be talking about, that's exactly the issue maybe one of the differences we might have with the California Attorney General staff is that we are not trying to be punitive to those that really have no effect really on our vehicle miles travel problem. It is the recreational traveler that comes into the basin that makes up 40 to 50% of our VMT. And yet, as you point out, we don't have any regulatory authority over them. So that's where we make the argument that we need funding support for what we're doing, because we're addressing a big part of our VMT, which we have no regulatory control over. But if we did have a transportation system that encouraged them to get out of their car, do that kind of stuff, that'll simply reduce our VMT. It'll improve our economy, improve the environmental recreational experience, all of that. So there's a lot of benefits as we deal with our transportation plan. But in the project implementation phase, we are really saying that we aren't going to, even if we, based on our total cap, approved everything out there, it wouldn't move the needle that much on VMT one way or the other. And so staff has been very sensitive as we put this package together that we are not going to punish the people in the basin. But at the same time, there is more that we expect from people in the basin. Because if you look at what Placer County is doing on the North Lake side and trying to come up with ways to help fund and improve the transit on the north side, you know, honestly, the South Lake needs to do more. And that's going to come to play as we start dealing with where are we going to get all the funding that we need to carry out this plan. So I think it's a well-balanced plan, and your point is one that I share and I think staff has addressed, especially when you hear the whole presentation. And John, you've also had a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this is a bit of a bridge to Shelley's question about kind of the scenario where overall travelers increase and we're needing to trigger management responses as proposed now. It's tied to the regional funding source in 2024. My question is, along these lines, will there be an attempt to provide some sort of at least a qualitative ranking of the estimated effectiveness of those triggers? And this could be a bridge to the next presentation, I suppose, as well. But for example, an assessment of which of the RTP elements will produce the biggest bang for the buck, the most VMT or GHG reduction. In a way that if they are implemented as management responses, they are most likely able to mitigate the VMT increase. So that's a question.
You know, John, if I could, I see Michelle raising her hand. I think if we let Michelle give her presentation, these kind of things will come out in her explanation on what's in the regional transportation plan and the trade-offs that are made and priorities and programs in that plan.
Well, I
guess mean to cut you off, John.
Yeah, the question as it relates to the VMT presentation would be to what extent will we identify the regional funding, but at what point is that tied to implementation of the measures and an assessment of their effectiveness on the ground as a mitigation measure, as opposed to the funding identified? I mean, the actual implementation of said measure and the assessment of the effectiveness of that measure in the VMT discussion.
Dan, you want to respond?
Yeah, I didn't know if Michelle was jumping in. I mean, so John, the short answer to your question is yes, we do that at both at the group or collective project level within the RTP projects. And then Melanie's also going to talk a little bit about how that is done at the individual project level in terms of quantifying the benefit of individual mitigation strategies at the project level.
And I'm going to jump in one more time, Bill, and just say, John, that if you're talking about kind of overall strategies in terms of the adaptive management program, we can look at, when the 2-year reports come out as to whether what things are effective and what things we need to do, we can add something in there to say, you know, to make certain that the recommendations that they're giving are efficient in terms of the money spent and the benefit expected.
Right. And that perhaps could be identified up front in some kind of, you know, some sort of idea, some kind of shared idea about which measures are assessed to have the most VMT or GHG reduction potential.
I don't know if in terms of up front, but in terms of their recommendation, they can identify which ones they think are most effective. That's what they're going to be tasked to do. Because it'll depend on what's causing the why they need to make the management response.
Right. Okay. Well, I'll listen to Michelle's presentation and probably have more questions. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Michelle, you're up.
All right. Thank you so much. Michelle Glickert, TRPA. Dan gave you a brief picture for the RTP, but now I'm going to walk you through an overview of the plan and talk about the policy changes needed to bring the transportation system in line with the new VMT standard and achieve our transportation goals. Next slide. Our vision is strong. We have a system that is connected within and connected to the region. It's a sustainable system. That means we're connecting people and places, all to reduce reliance on the personal auto and create options while protecting the environment. This RTP's vision is oriented to climate action, meeting our GHG goals, reducing our mobile source emissions, and reducing dependency on the automobile and the associated VMT. This RTP and sustainable community strategy goes beyond As you heard, the California Air Resource Board GHG reduction targets for Tahoe, and it also delivers additional GHG and VMT improvements. But mostly, it creates a full trail system, a robust transit system that serves everyone and connects the region to us and maximizes the use of the roadway. But this is a community plan developed with our locals, illustrating the power of collaboration, and this plan is helping us move forward to reaching our goals in collaboration. The plan's transportation vision stresses the connectivity and a focus on reducing auto use, expanding options for our residents and our visitors. Next slide. So our approach to planning is to understand who's moving around in Tahoe, right? Tahoe travel reveals different user behavior. At the end of the day, we need to provide options for everyone. And each traveler has a unique pattern. Travel options need to be designed for them. Part of the approach and framework for transportation planning is looking at all of those people. Because we are a recreation destination, we don't have typical weekday commutes. We have our congestion on the heavy, you know, winter, for winter access to the ski resorts, the summer months, getting to trailheads and the lake, all of those hot spots around the lake in the summertime. Visitors make up the two top tiers here, as Bill was saying. At the top, we have those longer trips coming in from outside the region. They arrive 96% of them by car. So this plan lays out how to increase the 4% non-auto mode share with regional park and rides, regional bus connections, and of course, laying the foundation for free and frequent transit once they are here. And in the middle, we have the recreation trips. Now that's the internal travel. So that's a little bit of our residents and a lot of our visitors going to those recreation destinations. So we're not doing too bad with over 34% getting around by bike, by foot, and by bus. And of course, the base. This is our residents and employees that we've just been talking about. Those trips include work, school trips, and errands. Now, 90% are completed by car. So there is a great opportunity for improvements here with better transit, better travel management programs through our employers, and regional commuter routes, as well as vanpool programs. This is how we also, forgive me, I didn't mean to leave this one out, but connecting our trails, right? Those other options to get to popular destinations, like our town centers, right? Better connections to our town centers where a lot of our employers are. So as far as data goes, though, this is also where we track the day user, and that's where they come in. And this is a hot topic of revenue discussions as of late. One section we've expanded in the plan since the plan was released. Next slide. So this is the framework we apply to all of those user types. And this is really our adaptive management system. Our plan, however, doesn't stand on its own. We will improve travel, reduce GHG, and reduce VMT, but the plan itself actually relies on other programs and policies in place. The RTP includes the goals and policies, which are the transportation goals and policies of the regional plan. It includes a funding plan, all of the projects and programs in there that will reduce reliance on the automobile. And it includes strategies to bring in those other significant plans and programs. That's what I would say. It's not really a standalone. For travel demand management, we fold in our partners, the travel management associations on the North and South Shore, focusing on improving the traveler experience, travel options, and those travelers include employees as well as visitors. And for trails, pulling in from the active transportation plan, the goal here is to connect the trail completely around the lake and to popular recreation sites. As far as transit goes, folding in the long and short-term transit plans for the two transit agencies, seeking to keep local transit free, make it frequent and fun. And for technology, we lean on the Tahoe Basin Intelligent Transportation System plan, maximizing the use of the existing roadway with technology. And last but not least is our communities. This part of the plan pulls in the robust corridor plans, area plans, and our safety strategy. So for example, SR89, it's a good example as of late, that's almost a miniature regional transportation plan. So that sets mode share goals, connects the Tahoe Trail, and utilizes transit and TDM through parking management, which are all critical elements to reduce VMT. Next slide. So this time around, as you know, we're making the plan more contemporary and focused on implementation. The plan provides a regional approach to mobile source GHG reduction and incorporates new GHG goals of California and supports Nevada state climate strategy, because climate change is at the forefront and transportation is a part of that solution. There is broad agreement. New funding is needed for transportation, and through the coordination among the bi-state consultation, the Tahoe Transportation District, and local government, there's significant momentum toward realizing new funding options. The plan includes this as a starting point for the funding initiative underway. The plan includes project priorities, and I think this gets to what John was asking about. These priorities have been identified through the bi-state consultation, working with the implementation partners, our private sector, and local governments, because we believe these are the projects that will move the ball the furthest. This includes the second phase of SR 28 corridor management plan along the East Shore. SR 89 has started a trail feasibility study, and of course the Main Street management plan along the South Shore. We also include in that priority list additional local and regional transit services. We leverage new technology in this plan as service models in providing transportation options, including travel apps and on-demand microtransit. So we've lots of lessons learned and success with micro shuttles over the past couple of years. Most familiar is probably the Mountaineer Squaw Valley service. So we are folding in our private sector to this plan. Those partnerships are important and now a part of the plan. Along those implementation lines, we have a new transit pilot project commencing this summer, connecting Reno to Incline. That'll be utilizing the reservation system, providing services every day of the week between Memorial Day and Labor Day. The final route and stops are still being developed. But it's these kinds of projects that we're going to be analyzing and watching through this adaptive management to see what's working, what isn't, how we could apply maybe something that is working elsewhere. The RTP sets out to increase our private sector partnership and the role they play. This isn't just on the transit side of the house. We're currently working with our South and North Shore TMAs to work with our employers around the basin, large and small, over the next year. And this program, Commute Tahoe, will provide information and tools to our employers to educate them and their employees on travel options. So working with the employers to find the low-hanging fruit so they can provide incentives to their employees. Now, the first phase of the program has started, and over the coming year, we'll be focused on that employer participation, and that will conclude with informed updates to the Code of Ordinances. And the second phase of travel management will be focusing on the visitor recreation travel, our program known as Linking Tahoe. And that's really one-stop shop for information on transit, where parking can be found. Now, some of this is already underway and ongoing with the first phase of State Route 28 from Incline to Sand Harbor. So again, projects that we'll be piloting now, and we'll be getting those lessons learned and adjusting. Plan enhanced details also on recreation travel. And that's access through corridor planning, right, that big C. The plan includes new data sources to better understand behavior. This is built within our analysis and forecast for the plan. Parking management, that includes pricing, managing the existing use of the roadway more efficiently, reservation systems. The pricing strategies are being piloted on the East Shore SR 28 project, as I just mentioned, but we also have the newly adopted Resort Triangle Transportation Plan, and they're preparing for parking management pilots to be focused on their town centers. So it's not just also these big projects that we'll be watching, but it's the little things like the Tahoe Backcountry Alliance is hopeful to pick up their pilot they previously started before COVID. This is a similar scaled service with vans servicing trailheads on the West Shore. There's a lot of opportunity out there. But now moving on to the goals and policies that support the projects and programs I've discussed. In your packet today are recommended changes to the policies alone. We've not made any changes to the goals. That's attachment D to your staff report. There's a full strike through, and I'll be highlighting a few of those new policies. As I mentioned, the goals and policies for the RTP are the transportation policies for the regional plan. Now, under environment, we've added two new policies. One focused on GHG and VMT, as well as updates to emphasize development and implementation of our project impact analysis, which Melanie's going to talk about. Under connectivity, this goal has the most robust policies and is actually split out into modes, focusing policies on each of our modes. We have a new policy that is to collaborate with nearby communities that share transportation to and from the Tahoe Basin, including the town of Truckee and Carson-Minden Valley, or getting at those visitor trips. And we've added two new policies on parking. Coordinate and maintain parking maximums and share parking standards that support goals and policies of the regional plan. And paid parking revenues should benefit infrastructure and services for transit, pedestrians, and cyclists within the area where funds are generated. Parking pricing and parking management, coupled with transit options, is one of the strongest strategies we can employ to make people think twice about taking their car. Next slide. So as for safety, we've added one new policy emphasizing improving safety data collection. It can take over a year before the data is cleared through the two states, delaying our ability to address unsafe conditions. Under operations and congestion management, we have four new policies. Worth highlighting is making policies relevant with new shared and demand mobility services, such as rideshare and bike share. And a new policy to coordinate policies around across multiple partners, right? Working with our partners to support the use of electric-assisted low-speed devices. That's on paths and trails that will serve travel needs in Tahoe. And this is important. With the growth in e-bike use, they are a great alternative to the auto to access recreation sites. That allows for a multitude of ages and abilities. And our last two goals here. Next slide. Economic vitality. We added one new goal, our new policy, forgive me, revolving around access to public transit, because we need to ensure that all of our vulnerable users, those without cars, those who are unable to drive, have access to services. And last but not least is system preservation. We have two new policies there. One I'll highlight is a policy for improving winter access. So this is not just about keeping the roads plowed. This means adding transit shelters and clearing our sidewalks, which are essential to get people using transit in the wintertime. And another highlight is the inclusion of mobility hubs in the policy. One size does not fit all, but a hub where various transit lines connect and people have shelter while they wait are absolutely needed. Now that concludes my part of the presentation today. I've highlighted our plan level initiative to provide more travel options and curb VMT. And before I was going to turn it over to Melanie, but there might be some questions. I'm going to turn it over to Melanie so she can talk about how we will implement the new VMT standard at a project level.
Hello, everyone.
Go ahead. Michelle.
I was just going to say I didn't know if you guys wanted to ask or
I haven't seen anything. I don't see anything on the chat thing. So, Melanie, why don't you just go ahead with your presentation? Thank you very much.
Bill, I do have a question for Michelle.
Oh, I'm sorry. Shelley, sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. No worries. Michelle, I noticed under 2.5 that some of the language that was struck includes priority travel lanes. Because of lack of right-of-way, are we abandoning the idea of creating lanes for bus travel and for cars with multiple passengers?
Absolutely not. It wasn't, I believe that was then probably worked in elsewhere, but so you know too, one of the priority projects I was mentioning is on the North Shore for priority travel lanes for buses. And that is a big piece of our future as well, is adaptive managing lanes so that we're not widening our roads, but we're using those lanes in different ways. So by no means is that off the table.
Okay, and one last question. One of the new policies is that paid parking revenue should benefit infrastructure and services for transit, pedestrians, and bicyclists within areas that funds are generated. I don't disagree with that in concept, but a lot of the paid parking, at least on the South Shore, is privately owned. So, you know, how are you going to coordinate, for example, with the casinos in the core at State Line to suggest that those revenues beyond what's necessary for routine maintenance should be used for that purpose?
Right. That, we actually have a good project in play right now, which is the Event Center, who in many ways will be doing this. The Event Center will be requiring those casinos to have paid parking. So in a way, that's going then back. The Event Center will be providing transit. So we have that connection. But you're right, it's not as if we want to overreach on private property. But we do want, in many cases, especially in our corridor management plans, where we want some of those revenues to stay on site to help with parking management, right? To pay for the maintenance of parking meters, whatever they may look like in the future.
Agreed. Shelley, this is John Marshall. Most of those, that policy is really directed toward most of our public parking spaces, not to the private side, yeah, because we don't have the ability to really direct where they're going to use the funds.
Right. Okay. But we're entering into conversations with those owners to suggest that some of that money beyond what's needed for routine maintenance might be contributed to the overall objective of increasing or improving infrastructure and services.
And Melanie's going to talk a little bit more too about some of the private property side of things when it comes to actually implementing strategies on site, such as paid parking.
Okay. Thanks, Michelle.
Yeah, you bet.
Okay. Thank you, everyone.
Hey, Melanie.
Thank you, Bill. So for the record, Melanie Sloan, staff with TRPA, and as mentioned a few times, I'm here to discuss the recommendations around project impact assessment and mitigation fee updates. And I really want to take a moment to just remind everyone that this is how we intend to better implement the VMT threshold at the project level and to tie more closely these two updates to that threshold. It's also being undertaken to streamline project impact assessment and align with our local jurisdictions in California, who are also using vehicle miles traveled, or VMT, for project impact assessment to comply with the California regulation SB 743, which Joanne mentioned earlier. And so the recommendation and code changes to support these updates, They've been put together based on a lot of information and work. They reflect analysis, input, and in large part, the research and thinking from California and its guidance for SB 743 implementation. And where our recommendations deviate from that, I will bring that to your attention over the next few slides. Next slide, please. So this diagram demonstrates the importance of location to trip length, and that is VMT, of a project. And this point, this diagram really does set the foundation for identifying which projects are significant. And you see that in the proposal before you. The updates that we'll do to project impact assessment and mitigation fee will better identify which projects are significant by using VMT. And that inherently recognizes location does matter. And it also in assessing the requirements on projects, and that ensures support for the RTP update and implementation of the VMT threshold at the project level. And as a result, the approximately 7% of future VMT that's projected from development and redevelopment will be reduced through a process that is focused on project location and size, mitigation strategies, and fees. Next slide, please. And there are four key updates to the proposal. One is to align the impact assessment with the project's impact by using VMT instead of trips. Not all trips are equal, right? Secondly, defining expectations for all projects, regardless of the status of our VMT threshold, whether it's an attainment or not. Three, we'll be creating that more straightforward, predictable, and streamlined project impact assessment process. And four, we will be updating the framework for the mitigation fee to align it with impact assessment by changing calculation from trips to VMT. And not part of today's packet, but work to be taken after adoption, is setting the exact fee amount. Next slide, please. So this chart shows the updated process at a high level. The updates will transparently determine significant impacts and mitigations, provide a streamlined review process for simpler projects, and provide detailed analysis for significance and mitigation determination of more complex projects. And it will do this by evaluating every project using defined screening criteria, applying standards of significance based on the land use type, either through an online tool or an agreed upon analysis, and then determining what kinds of mitigations are most appropriate for reducing the project's impact with VMT. Next slide, please. So to talk about those main components, I'll start with screening criteria. And the question here is about what types of projects are of a size and in a location that requires more detailed review and more types of mitigations. In Tahoe, we've always had a standard for this. It's been 200 average daily trips, which we propose retaining and except translating it to VMT, which is 1,300 average daily VMT. So this is where we do differ from the guidance coming from California, which recommends using 110 average daily trips. No VMT equivalent is stated on the guidance, but the basis on that 110. And that is how California sets forth guidance for determining if a project has a significant effect or has an insignificant effect. So anything less than 110 average daily trips under that guidance would have an insignificant effect. And so it's a bit nuanced, but needs to be really clear, is that our recommendation is a bit stricter than that. And it might not seem so if you just look at the numbers, but let me tell you why. It's because every project in Tahoe that generates VMT is required to mitigate. And some are required to do so with fees and others with more, such as strategies and fees. And so in the end, in Tahoe, there is no project that has an insignificant effect. Rather, the screening sets a line, let's say. So screen projects are those that are best able to mitigate their impact through paying fees. And that those fees help fund implementation of projects and programs from the RTP constrained project list. And non-screen projects, those that produce more than 1,300 VMT, well, those projects are of a size that can meaningfully mitigate that VMT at the project level, as well as through, and that would be done through mitigation strategies. Some of those teased by Dan and Michelle include things like parking, and I'll talk a bit about strategies in another two slides. So, those bigger, more complex projects producing more than 1,300 VMT will be asked to mitigate through strategies on site, and they'll also pay fees. And to note also within that 1,300 VMT screen is an adjustment for projects in and near to town and regional centers. That's that location matters. And that those adjustments are proposed based on data from our 2018 summer travel survey. Next slide, please. The recommendation for standard of significance follows and expands a bit on the guidance from California. And those expansions are to include common land use projects in Tahoe that weren't included in that guidance. And those include tourist accommodation units and recreation projects. And then we also adjusted the recommendation based on data needs in the region for public service. Now, standards of significance are what are the requirements for those non-screened projects, those that produce more than 1,300 average VMT. And so those projects will be required to perform better than similar on-the-ground development. And again, this standard of significance in the recommendation before you no longer depends on whether the VMT threshold is or is not an attainment, closing that loophole in our current impact assessment process. Next slide, please. And as I said a few times up to this slide on mitigations, every project that generates new VMT will be required to mitigate it, some by fees and others by doing fees and strategies. So those non-screen projects producing more than 1,300 VMT will be required to do more with strategies that could include pricing parking, as Michelle teased earlier, perhaps van pools for staff for employment type uses and others. And the mitigation strategies in the recommendation follows that California guidance, is enhanced by current research, was reviewed by our consultant FAIR and peers, and made recommendations for what are most appropriate for project level within Tahoe specifically. And all of those are linked to the RTP and its constrained project list. So again, these assessments are really tying to implementing that VMT threshold at the project level and advancing the RTP. Now, the mitigation fee program, the air quality mitigation fee, as it's called today, will be revised and renamed to be the mobility mitigation fee. And it will change its calculation from using trips as the unit of calculation to using VMT. and that aligns it with the impact assessment, as well as the RTP, as well as that VMT threshold. And once more, just for clarity, all projects that produce new VMT will pay the fees. Next slide, please. So before we could build out and set that exact fee, which is a key question for many people, and I certainly understand the interest, and for developing those implementation tools, including the online tool, we needed to know what we were designing to. And that what is what is in the recommendation brought to you today. Post-adoption of that, we will finalize the mitigation fee program by developing a project list using the RTP constrained project list, and then setting the fee to be charged, which will be completed in consultation with jurisdictions and stakeholders and the development community. TRPA staff will finalize the tool development, and when completed, it will also be able to assess projects for our California jurisdictions for SB 743 compliance. That's that streamlined process we were talking about earlier. And then finally, monitoring is key to this, and we will develop a monitoring program using ongoing work and forthcoming research from our partners at UC Davis. And that research is specifically focused on providing recommendations for project impact assessment mitigation monitoring. So we'll be able to use some of the most recent information and approach to monitoring when we develop that. So that concludes my slides for project impact assessment and fee. Before opening to questions, I just want to take a quick moment to talk about our schedule. If you could go to next slide, please. So we are here with you today with our three proposals for VMT threshold, RTP update, and project impact assessment and fees. This afternoon, Michelle will be speaking with the EIP committee around the RTP specifically, and she will also go to the Tahoe Transportation Commission seeking recommendation for the RTP update on April 9th. We will then take the three items, threshold, RTP, and project work, to the APC on April 14th, seeking recommendation, and are planning to request action from the governing board on April 28th. And with that, next slide. Thank you so much, and I look forward to your questions.
Okay, colleagues, this concludes the presentation, but feel free to begin to ask any question you might have. I realize this has been quite a lot of information, but I think hopefully you can appreciate, as Joanne said at the beginning, this really is a systematic change that we're making. We're not just removing a threshold and moving a threshold, but it really combines it with our regional transportation plan, is trying to address the recreational impact on Lake Tahoe. Through a much better transportation system that would provide the alternative transportation means for people that come to the lake. And for the west side, what I'm most familiar with, any hot day is going to want to bring people in the summertime up to Lake Tahoe. And even a pandemic isn't going to stop people from coming to Lake Tahoe. And even for the east side folks, you know, Reno and Sparks and even Minden and Gardnerville, they are going to grow. Lake Tahoe is a big draw. The mountains around Lake Tahoe are a big draw. And so we need a better system in order to be able to manage things. And just sticking up a no parking sign outside of State Route 89 around Emerald Bay is useless. So we need a better system. We have a corridor plan, for example, for Emerald Bay. It costs something to do the management, do the work that's required to create the shuttle system, the parking areas, all the stuff that would go with that. And those are the things that's hard for us to compete with the other areas around both states that also need transportation dollars. And so that's why we're making this effort to really come up with tying this to a funding strategy, pointing out that we really can't fulfill the compact's goal to encourage people to get out of their car unless we have a better transportation system. And there's a commitment that was made by both states to protect Lake Tahoe. And now that commitment in 2021 requires us to also upgrade that transportation system's infrastructure so that we can protect this lake and still maintain the recreational experience and also the revenue generated from this area for both states. So that's kind of my wrap up for all this. But any other, Cindy, you have a question.
I do, Bill. Thank you. And I appreciate your wrap up. Melanie, in looking at the mobility mitigation fees that we've talked about, I know I've asked this before, and I'm going to continue to bring it up on public record. So, for instance, if a jurisdiction wants to address this on a more regional basis and implement mitigations for their entire town centers through raising money from a broader group, those could be substituted in lieu of an individual project paying the mitigation fee. I guess that's my question. Can a jurisdiction submit an alternative scenario versus paying those individual mitigation fees?
So as I understand your question, Cindy, it really does fit in with what is currently in our code and not anticipated to be changed through this program, which is recognizing and providing credits recognizing where credits have been applied. In this sense, you're talking about VMT reductions. So yes, that is a continued facet of the recommendation.
Great. I appreciate that. You know, we've worked really hard with our business community to get the concept of the Tourism Business Improvement District passed so that all businesses, all types of businesses are paying in to potential tourism impacts, and of which we are going to use the funding for transportation and workforce housing, both of which are going to contribute to VMT reductions and are part of that land use discussions that we've been talking about, especially with our town center incentives. And we've also worked pretty diligently for the rest of the board to know on coming up with a TOT incentive program to try to help incentivize lodging downtown, because our town centers are significantly lacking any increased lodging in our downtown since the 1960s. So in trying to incentivize that, we are also forgiving their TOT collections, a significant portion of that. And so trying to layer on additional fees on that new development for such a small part of the VMT to us has not looked like a good approach. Instead, we want to really look at it regionally through this T-bid. And because the nature of a TBID is a self-assessment on these businesses, you know, obviously to get it renewed, to keep it and to get it renewed, we're going to have to produce real actions that benefit these folks. So I'm looking for all the tools to keep everybody in the game and see the benefits from working together collaboratively versus project by project. And I really appreciate all the efforts TRPA staff, all three of you have put into this presentation today. I think it is a comprehensive relook at it, really how, after some 35 years of being involved in the basin, we're trying to address this dramatic growth that's occurring all around us. I was looking at the numbers today from 1982 in the Bay Area, Sacramento, and Reno metropolitan areas, and looking at the incredible growth surrounding the Tahoe Basin and understanding those impacts are not lessening. And we've really got to deal with that recreational travel in a comprehensive manner. So I appreciate all of the efforts. Thank you.
Thank you,
Cindy. I thank you for your questions and your comments and for your good work in Placer County, and also for the Placer County staff. For the work that they're doing, and hopefully what we're doing is going to be supportive of what you're doing and what we do in that resort triangle with those participants that are somewhat outside the basin, but clearly part of our overall transportation work. So I don't see anyone else on my chat. Is there any other of my colleagues just want to talk, or do we want to go to public comment? Seeing nothing, I think staff, I think we're ready to go to public comments, and I'll, Maria, are you covering that, or is Catherine doing this?
Catherine will be assisting.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Carol Black, you're unmuted on my end to address our pick.
Great. Can you hear me? This is Carol Black. I'm from Incline Village.
Go ahead.
Okay, thanks very much. Just a few brief comments. This was really quite an impressive set of presentations and a huge amount of work, effort, and conceptual thought. I just have a couple of suggestions. I think the themes I would focus on with some minor suggested changes that I've listed and provided to you in written form are safety and neighborhood compatibility regarding transit in communities, balancing optimizing quality of life in communities and neighborhoods with business objectives, maintaining flexibility in planned interventions, around, for example, mobility hubs to match the community situation, managing development to meet community neighborhood needs within the context of preserving the environment, and maximizing access to all potentially available recreational areas to distribute demand. I'm thinking about the visitors that you all were discussing earlier. I'm just going to highlight a couple of suggestions. I sent some more in writing. So in goals, you have a safety goal that says increased safety and security for all users of Tahoe's transportation system. And I'd suggest adding and maintain or enhance transit-related safety in the community served. That's just an example. Another, in a policy example, you have a policy 2.22 about mobility hubs. And I'd suggest just softening the wording a little bit to capture the flexibility concept that Michelle highlighted in her presentation. And last, I'd like to add, I'm asking basically some questions about policy 5.1. There are some other policies I've highlighted. These are just examples, but around the encourage community revitalization and transit-oriented development projects, et cetera. I don't totally understand the development chits, et cetera. I don't understand exactly this bikeable, walkable development link in California since I'm in Nevada, but I do want to ask the question in terms of how this is going to apply outside of town centers, but in areas where trails or access has been provided for recreational sites. I'm assuming the town center development standards that were changed recently are not automatically going to be applied in those areas, at least I hope not. So just want to make that point. And last, in terms of the impact fees, not fees, but the project impact, wonderful presentation, all of the presentations were terrific. But I just want to be sure that the concept of impact and measurement and assessment will be applied to public as well as private projects with equal rigor in terms of assessing the impact that Melanie was describing. So with that, and 13 seconds left, thank you very much. I did make a couple of other suggestions, which I don't have time for, but I submitted them in writing. Thanks again.
Thank you, Carol. I have read your letter, and I appreciate your ongoing interest and work with staff, and I'm sure they'll respond to your questions. Thank you. Catherine?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jesse Patterson, you're unmuted on my end. Make sure you also unmute yourself to address the committee.
Good morning, everyone. May I request 5 minutes for an organization? I'll attempt to stay at three, but to make that request.
You may.
Good morning, RPA Chair, members, TRPA staff. I just want to say that the League appreciates the opportunity to provide these comments. They support the letter we submitted yesterday and the year-long plus work, maybe it's 4 years, according to Dan. We've been working with your staff and stakeholders. So first, I'd like to thank TRPA staff, Dan, Melanie, Michelle, John Marshall in particular, for spending so much time with us and the stakeholders in this collaborative process to get through this. The proposed VMT package in front of you today, while we believe is still a work in progress, demonstrates the success from that effort, and we're largely supportive of the package as it stands today. In particular, we're supportive of, you know, the collective goals of updating the VMT threshold that were mentioned. We agree with the VMT per capita metric seems appropriate based on the dynamics of the travel patterns of Tahoe. We also think the target seems reasonable. We believe it could be more ambitious, but appreciate the ability to revisit that target on a regular basis and make it more ambitious as we have, hopefully have success implementing the RTP and RPU. The connection to the creation of a regional funding source and then having actual funding in place, we think is key to this package. Of course, the allowances for affordable housing and focus on town centers, as well as updating mitigation fees, are all a good portion as well. So lots of other things we support, but a few remaining concerns. I'd like to briefly describe sort of our thought process in arriving at what we support and what our concerns, our remaining concerns are. We wholeheartedly support those collective goals of improving mobility, reducing greenhouse gases from transportation, and reducing dependence on the private auto. But you could argue we have not done super well on many of those goals, particularly the last one over the decades. We agree, Bill, you mentioned this earlier, that implementing the regional transportation plan is likely how we'll achieve and maintain this new threshold, of course, in concert with implementation of the RPU. But we believe the implementation of the RTP successfully is dependent heavily on sustainable regional funding. I think everyone being involved in this realizes funding is needed, particularly regional funding to complement federal funding. And we need to do everything we can to make sure we have success in securing that funding. We believe that is the key. So we ask ourselves, what would motivate accelerated and effective collaboration and the progress in doing this? We believe it's the promise of gaining something through our successes. And so that comes to our main kind of remaining concern is that we actually believe the no-net VMT requirement should remain in place as it is today and be removed as we reach milestones in success. We think that's less disruptive because otherwise you're removing it and then maybe putting it back in just 2 years if we don't hit our targets. And in a way, that's actually punishing failure rather than rewarding success, because if we have success in getting the regional funding and reaching our goals, then we have the incentive of removing the no-net VMT standard and moving into the proposed program. We actually think that makes a lot more sense. I appreciate Dan's presentation and Jim's comments on trust and adaptive versus prescriptive. We trust that there's a concerted effort to implement the RTP and find the regional funding, but we want to make sure we have the incentives there to get it done effectively and efficiently, while still maintaining a way to reward success of jurisdictions that are perhaps doing better than the rest of the region. I think that could be worked into it, and that's something that I think we should look to do. We also believe that some details on more specific funding targets would be helpful. We think it paints a clearer picture of what we're all aiming at, and we think that makes it easier to have success. We actually think adaptive and prescriptive approaches are both necessary. We believe in adaptive management, but having a clear target would make it easier for all involved to know what we're aiming at, whether it's removing the no-net VMT or putting it in place. We can adapt that target over time as we start to implement the plans, but I believe we should have a clear target now on how much money we're trying to raise, and that money should be tied directly to the projects we believe are going to be most effective and reducing VMT as identified in the RTP. Thank you, Michelle, for that presentation. And I do appreciate Jim's comment on adaptive versus prescriptive. We certainly don't know the right answer right now, but again, I think it's our duty to put a clear target in place, do everything we can to get there, and incentivize our success rather than be kind of in this middle ground of moving around between what we have today and the new program and maybe going back to what we have today. So in summary, we share the same goal with everyone. I think I'm over time. You've heard my points, and thank you for all your work on this.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the league's involvement. Thank you. Catherine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sophie Winslow.
Good morning. This is Sophie Winslow at the California Attorney General's Office speaking at a staff level. May I also request 5 minutes, and I will
attempt. Certainly may.
Certainly. Great, thank you. During the threshold update process, staff has provided additional information regarding the connection between VMT and NOx. Based on this information, we are no longer concerned that transitioning from an absolute to a per capita VMT standard is likely to adversely affect water quality. We are, however, still reviewing the environmental document for the proposed update and considering its potential impact and still urge a cautious approach. We have provided detailed feedback to staff on the proposed materials and will just share a few of our high-level comments today. First, TRP proposal relies heavily on the generation of regional revenue to fund VMT-reducing projects in the basin. The funding target in the proposal needs to be quantified and clarified to be ongoing. As written, it is toothless. We'd also like to see net zero be the standard for new development and redevelopment until the funding target is met. That is an important requirement that would motivate partners to work together to obtain funding. Second, while we agree that funding is key and are pleased to see the commitment to develop funding, it would be prudent to not put all of the eggs in the funding basket. To that end, we'd like to see adaptive management measures stronger than the proposed mitigation fee increase, such as regulatory requirements for on-the-ground projects that would reduce VMT and course correct if the basin is not on track to meet the 6.8% reduction threshold. The proposed mitigation fee increase is legally questionable and unlikely to generate much money. Third, staff has emphasized that the basin is nearly at build out. As a result, we believe the proposal should not rely too heavily on new development or redevelopment to achieve VMT reductions. We think it is imperative that the program include a way to reach back to existing development through some sort of VMT retrofit program that encourages or requires existing businesses to make changes on site to reduce their VMT generation. Fourth, we'd like to see more frequent milestones and checkpoints. While the two-year advisory body review makes good sense, there are only two adaptive management opportunities built into the program in its current form. These need to be more frequent. Finally, we are concerned with the screening limits staff has proposed, which, along with the area plan exemption, would exempt far too many projects from evaluating and addressing their transportation impacts. We have asked staff to justify their proposed approach and to, at a minimum, maintain conformity with OPR guidance on screening. As I said, we have provided detailed comments to staff and hope to continue talking with staff over the coming weeks. Thank you for your time.
Whoops, I didn't have this on. Thank you, Sophie, for your comments and your ongoing work with staff, and hopefully we will reach an accord by April. Thank you.
Steve DeShera, you may make comments to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, staff. This is Steve DeShera on behalf of Tahoe Chamber. As the chamber representative, I have participated in many of the technical and public meetings referenced by staff during their presentation this morning, part of developing the VMT proposals before you today. We heard about the regional transportation plan as well, but we're not commenting, or are you taking any action on that today? We believe that agency staff has made a very compelling case that the existing VMT threshold related to nitrate deposition is obsolete and should be replaced. We support the elimination of the existing VMT threshold standard. This has been called for in numerous threshold evaluations. We understand the net zero VMT trigger would be set, according to the current language, in 2024. We do not support an immediate no net VMT requirement. This would be a disincentive to new and redevelopment projects and contrary to the goals and policies and directions of the 2012 regional plan. We support an approach that involves incentives, voluntary partnerships, and accountability. We have worked diligently with our business community to educate them and bring them up to speed on these and other transportation-related proposals. And during the pandemic, this has been a particular challenge. So we ask the agency to please tread carefully on these matters and go with the incentive, voluntary partnerships, and accountability approach. This allows the business community to feel like they are part of the conversation and not the target of the conversation and the rules. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate your comments and also appreciate your work with staff and on the region on this issue and your role as a director of the Tahoe Transportation District.
Mr. Chair, there are no further public comments on this item.
Okay. Well, this brings it back to, I think staff was hoping for a recommendation from this committee. Maybe I could help kind of shorten this a bit. I think that I would like you to go back and work on the overall program that you presented to us. I think there are issues that you've heard, not only from comments from the committee, but also from the public comments about some of the screening issues, additional questions about the no-net VMT, and the issue that in some of the letters have been talked about flipping that, the impacts that might have, some of the screens that we use, especially the 200 trip versus what is in OPRs. And we may actually want to try to visit with OPR about why we treat ours differently and see what their reaction is. But I think you should have a pretty good sense of what some of those concerns are. And we've also had our own private discussions in smaller groups. But I think that this systematic approach is appropriate and necessary. We really need to do this, I think it's time to clean up some of the code issues and the regional plan amendment language that has been pointed out, and then bring it back to this committee for us to be able to make a recommendation, and then to the governing board. And then follow up also what is going to go to the APC. But that's my sense of it. If there's any other comments, I don't see any other on my chat. So
Bill, this is Jim. I do have a comment. Okay. I just didn't get to the chat function quick enough. Thank you. And thanks to all the presenters and particularly the folks that made public comments as well. I do have a couple of comments. One comment straight out is Bill, as chair, I want to thank you for your leadership on this VMT issue. As a planner, it has bugged me forever that our VMT thresholds and standards weren't aligned with the goals. And to me, that's just not good planning. And I know this is a tough lift because there's a lot to this, but I want to thank you, Bill, for your leadership on this and all of your hard work. And I also want to thank TRPA staff and all of the stakeholders that have been working on this. I think this is desperately needed. So appreciate all of the time and effort. I like in Michelle's presentation, sort of the nuance of looking at travel patterns in the basin. Historically, it just has struck me that we've talked about travel and transportation as in-basin versus out-of-basin, and I just think today's world is too complicated for that. And so I like looking at it as the recreational traveler, whether it's in-basin versus out-of-basin, and looking at the workforce, looking at even pass-through traffic, because it is a U.S. highway that goes through and connects two state capitals. So I like the way that we're going there. As far as moving forward, I made some comments earlier, and then I really appreciate some of the comments from the California AG's office and the league in particular. I do want to clarify when I'm talking about being adaptive versus prescriptive. I think triggers really should be more prescriptive. I mean, we need to know when we hit a trigger, and we need some clarity of what that trigger is going to be or what constitutes hitting that trigger. So I think that does need to be prescriptive. And so I think, staff heard some comments there. Maybe take a look at that. I am I'll just say it's my personal philosophy that I do not really believe in this complicated world of identifying in advance what the response is. Because when a trigger is hit, it can be hit for a variety of reasons. And I think it's important to evaluate the reasons why that trigger was hit before crafting what the management response is. That way we know we're hitting the target. So I just kind of clarify that. And I'm fine with, you know, maybe taking a look at triggers and do we need to be more clear on what that trigger is? But the response needs to be an adaptive management, in my opinion. So those are just my comments. And I do recommend, you know, I am in favor of proceeding with the package. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Those are my comments.
Thank you, Jim. Those are excellent comments. Thank you very much. Any other comments from the committee members?
Hey, Mr. Chair, this is John. I have a comment.
Okay, John. Yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up. I had mentioned this earlier in questioning, but just tying in again to the league and the California AG's comments, two that were related. One, the league's tying projects to the most proven effective VMT and GHG reduction projects, the ones that are estimated to have that most potential make sense to me, which mirror the California AG's comment about going beyond fees and funding sources to on-the-ground projects as prescriptive measures, at least having them identified and ready to implement and to the extent possible measured for effectiveness, I think would bring a lot more assuredness that we are indeed offsetting VMT if we get to that trigger. So I would encourage more investigation of those points. So again, we can just, you know, we can respond with those measures we think will be most successful on the ground and ideally prove them through measurement to indeed offset to VMT if we get to that point.
Thank you, John. I agree. So staff, I try to muddle out a motion myself. If Jim or John or one of the others want to just kind of state a motion, I just think we just want to direct staff to finalize the adoption of the package for a recommendation to the full governing board of the threshold regional plan code of ordinance amendments as set forth in the staff report, and to address those issues that the committee members have raised. And that we heard from the public. So if someone wants to make that motion, and then if we, I guess we should have a roll call on that. Maria.
Bill, this is Cindy. I'm happy to make that motion, as you so eloquently stated.
Okay, great.
Hey, Ms. Aldine.
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Enthusiastically, yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Mr. Yates?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, that motion passes.
Thank you very much.
Bill, can I request something that when staff comes back with a modified package to take into consideration some of the concerns and expressed today during our meeting, that those changes be highlighted in the text so they can be easily identified?
Yes. That's a good point, Shelley. We had a multicolored document that was kind of presented this time, and hopefully we just would do that. We would highlight in some fashion our response to the comments that we heard today, and so that you can see what the staff response is to those comments. It's a good point. So we're a little bit over our time, this is the moment for any committee member comments on other issues regarding what you hear out in the community or whatever. I don't see anyone raising their hand or anything on chat, so I think I'll move on to item number 7, the public interest comments. This is the final opportunity for public comments. If any member of the public wishes to address the Regional Plan Implementation Committee on an item not on the agenda, please raise your hand now in the GoToWebinar and to be unmuted by TRPA staff. So, Catherine, is there anyone that wants to speak on items not on the agenda?
Steve Teixeira, you still have your hand raised. Did you want to make further public comment? Mr. Chair, there looks like there is no further public comment.
Thank you, Mario. Okay, so I'll happy to accept a motion to adjourn the Regional Plan Implementation Committee.
I'll move, Mark.
Mr. Chairman, I move to adjourn the RPIC committee meeting, and I'd like to advise people who are interested in participating in the Operations and Governance Committee meeting that we will commence that meeting at 10:45.
Okay, thank you very much, Shelley. For those that are going on to the legal committee, you will hop off this platform and go to the link to the Zoom webinar for the legal committee at www.trpa.gov, which is in the calendar event for today's governing board meeting. And I don't know what's going to happen after those two committee meetings as far as the governing board, but obviously we're a little bit over time here. So all those in favor of the motion to adjourn?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. Well, thank you very much. It was an excellent committee meeting. Thank you.